For argument is United States versus Flowers. Oh, it's not the last. Sorry. Next case, United States versus Flowers, Mr. Tassif.
Oh, my.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Flowers deserves a new trial because his Fifth Amendment privilege was violated by the prosecutor's repeated references to his post-arrest refusal to answer a question or questions after he had been admonished of his Miranda rights.
You keep talking about his post-arrest silence, but he wasn't silent. I haven't been able to get over that hurdle.
Silence refers to his refusal to answer the question with respect to who owned the drugs. The record indicates that he was asked specifically, or the agent was asked, if the defendant knew who owned the drugs. And the answer was, and this is on page 16 of the appendix, I asked Mr. Flowers who the narcotics belonged to. He stated he did know. However, he would not
Right, and he
me.
Did know is not silent.
Well, he wouldn't inform. He said the agent's testimony was he would not inform me who owned it.
But he said he knew.
That he knew, but he wouldn't give the name.
So what?
Miranda.
You can certainly. He said he knew, and that's evidence. That's a statement. It's probably proper for the government to comment on that.
Well, he knew who the drugs belonged to, but refused to reveal the owner. And it's the refusal to name the owner that the government seized upon in its closing argument on two occasions as evidence of the defendant's guilt. And this is why we submit this is a Doyle error. Miranda and the Fifth Amendment protect an individual's right to refuse to answer any questions.
But you agree the government should say he admitted he knew who owned the drugs. They could say that, couldn't they?
Well, that was a statement. Indeed, Your Honor, that's what Mr. Flowers said to the agent.
So the government could comment. Who? Government could comment on that to the jury.
Yes, because it's an admission.
Right.
But where they take this into what we submit as the reversible error Doyle issue is where they harp upon his refusal to tell the officer who the drugs belong to. And in a case such as this, where it's a constructive possession theory by the prosecution that the drugs in the upstairs apartment belong to the downstairs tenant, and where we're arguing that his mere presence or association with others who could have been the possessors does not render him guilty of this case. This is where we submit, we suffer the harm before the jury. This is not a case, as in those instances the government relies upon, where an inadvertent reference to a defendant's refusal to answer a question, objection sustained, curative instruction, and no further remark. We got hammered.
The issue isn't inadvertence. The issue is whether when he starts to talk, he invites comment on his statements.
And I respectfully submit, Your Honor, once he starts talking, whatever he says is fair game. However, when he invokes his Fifth Amendment privilege and refuses, that's where the Doyle issue says you can't punish him for that. And it wasn't so much his knowledge of who the drug dealer was that killed us here.
What if he said, I know who owns the drugs, but I'm not telling you?
Had he said that, precisely that, my argument, obviously, in my opinion, would lack much force.
Right.
And again, Your Honor, the Lindgren case, the Splung case, S-P-L-U-N-G case, all these decisions say that if you're admonished of your Miranda rights and you agree to speak, then what you say becomes the admission. But when he specifically refuses to answer a specific question, this court in Smith versus Cadigan says Miranda protections extend to a refusal to answer any question. And indeed, Miranda specifically says that in the body of its opinion. So we got beat over the head by the prosecutor's argument to the jury, both in the primary argument and in rebuttal. He told you he knew, but did he say anything else? He won't tell you who the owner is because he's the owner. Four times we had to hear the prosecutor tell the jury that Mr. Flowers owned the drugs and he's trying to trick the police and avoid responsibility. And well, this is where it's reversible error.
Let's say it was error. But why isn't it harmless error in this case because of the evidence from testimony? I understand that all these people are shady and seem to have a lot of reasons to lie. But they, you know, all these people who testified that the drugs belonged to Mr. Flowers, there's some physical evidence, the fingerprint on the paper plate, the cell phone calls, the marked buy money found in the nightstand. Why wouldn't, you know, all this be harmless error?
Well, we had our hands full, conceitedly. The court directed a verdict with respect to the conspiracy count on a buyer-seller issue. And I would respectfully submit what hurt us here is that our theory was if Merlin Flowers knew who the drug dealer was and his association with that person, nothing more, he's not guilty. We tried to take issue with the government's theory of the case that the fingerprint on the paper plate on which there was a plastic plate on which there were other items is nothing more than the happenstance of a paper plate taken from a stack of 500 plates. And those are all jury arguments that obviously the jury did not agree with. But what hurt us here is that if Merlin Flowers knew who the drug dealer was but didn't tell the police officer, then the adverse inference from that is, hey, if it's not you, Mr. Flowers, then who is it? And wouldn't you be the first to cry to the officer who it is so as to spare yourself this prosecution and to point the finger at the real drug dealer? That's where we got hurt. And the government said, well, I
think about the Anderson versus Charles case.
Well, in the Anderson case,
say holds that a prosecutor may inform the jury about the entire sequence of questions.
Well,
let me finish.
I'm sorry, John.
Preceding a post-arrest statement, even though the suspect declined to answer some of the queries.
In the Anderson kind of case, and this Splung versus Park from the Seventh Circuit, Judge Ripple analyzes all of those cases, and I commend.
But I'm talking about
Splung
this. This is in Judge Ripple's case.
Yes. In those line of cases, I respectfully submit the defendant is claiming that his post-arrest statement was involuntary, and the government is trying to put the whole sequence of events to put the statement in context to show that his rights were respected and the police did nothing wrong. Or another line of cases where...
But you're not answering what I'm asking about with Charles.
Well, in a Splung case, and I believe Splung expands on the Anderson case from the Supreme Court, the earlier statement that he wanted to talk to a lawyer or remain silent was the mere prologue to the introduction of the entire statement itself. And why I want the record to reflect, and I'm trying to emphasize this point to this court.
What about Judge Easterberg's case and the Splung case that you're referring to?
Indeed. I believe Splung...
Prosecutors was questions of a police officer informing jury of petitioner's post-arrest silence did not constitute constitutionally forbidden comment on silence.
I believe the Splung case was authored by Judge Ripple, case that I'm referring to, and further, that was the
yes,
case.
Judge Ripple,
that was the case.
He filed a dissenting opinion.
Judge Easterbrook did.
Judge Ripple filed a dissenting.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm mistaken. My recollection of those lines of cases is that there was a reference to the defendant's refusal to answer to put in context all of what was subsequently testified to as to the entirety of his statement.
If you waive your Miranda rights and you start talking to the police and you answer a bunch of questions, you know, whose keys are these and all that, I don't understand why the whole sequence shouldn't be admissible.
Well, in this instance, and this is where I believe those other cases are distinguishable, this offensive question we submit was the last of a series of questions posed by the prosecutor to the government witness about the post-arrest statement. This is how he concluded that line of questions.
But once he opens the door, anything they can ask, isn't that true?
But once he opens the door and chooses to speak, whatever he says is admissible. Right. What he refuses to say is the assertion of his privilege, which can't be penalized.
You
under
can't
all
just
the
pick out one thing and say he can say this. then you can't say that.
Well, Your Honor,
I got one sentence to say.
I respectfully disagree when a defendant in a post-arrest situation...
He never retracted his waiver.
You can retract a waiver and proceed, but if he specifically refuses to answer
but
question,
he didn't
Miranda...
he retract his waiver. He said, uh-oh,
no.
I'm getting into dangerous territory here, so I think I'll reassert my
Charles
Miranda
Reed says, a defendant who voluntarily speaks after receiving his Miranda warnings has not been induced to remain silent.
True. So whatever he says cannot be admissible. But the Hernandez,
and I can say that he said, I won't answer them.
Well, then
anything that he says, they can.
Then I would respect. I ask the court to consider its ruling in U.S. versus Hernandez.
What
this
is
court,
the point?
This
though?
Court found error.
Is there a point to what you're arguing? Is this just the theocracy of constitutional law, or is there some substantial right that is infringed in a case?
Fifth
like
Amendment
this?
Privilege. When a citizen accused in a post-arrest interview. Having been admonished of his
and then he starts babbling.
Answer a question.
And then he starts babbling, and then he
babble,
then
babble,
he
babble.
Up. Yes.
And then when he's whatever he says can
why?
Be used.
Why? He's decided he wants to talk to the police.
Because Miranda says the right to cut off questions is available to the accused at any stage during that interrogation, and if he's invoking his rights, they're seizing upon it to penalize him. In the trial context, this is very damaging evidence to a jury. He didn't
well,
tell
it
you.
It could be damaging.
Not when we
because
value the Fifth Amendment privilege,
said.
As the Supreme Court
everything
said in Dickerson.
Else he said.
Well, as the Supreme Court recently said in Dickerson,
yeah, well.
Miranda is indeed an integral part of the Fifth Amendment privilege.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Townsend.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Mahochko?
May it please the Court, my name is John Mahochko. I'm an assistant United States attorney, Central District of Illinois, in the Rock Island branch office. I have two main points that I want to talk to the court about this morning. And those are the statement that Mr. Flowers made in police was not silent, and that the prosecutor also did not argue that the silence was indicative of guilt. Both of those points are essential to find a Doyle violation, and neither of those points is present in this case.
You know, you offered to withdraw the question. I'm curious as to why you changed your mind about the propriety of using the refusal to answer.
Judge, I was not the Assistant United States Attorney of the prosecutor in this case below. But
today
but
you are the government.
I understand that. I just wanted to make it clear that I personally did not withdraw that question. The reason why the Assistant U.S. Attorney offered to withdraw that question was... initially saw that there may have been a problem, and then upon further reflection and argument realized that the statement was not an assertion of the right to silence. Along the lines of the discussion here today, it was simply a statement made by the defendant, and that whole statement had to be taken in context.
You mean when the judge jumped in and helped the government? Is that what you mean?
Your Honor, there was an extended discussion between Judge McDade and defense counsel, and my understanding is during that discussion, it became clear to the assistant U.S. attorney that there were there was in fact a legitimate ground to advance that testimony, Your Honor.
Now listen, if Flowers had said I refuse to answer on the grounds that my answer may tend to incriminate me, instead of saying I'm not telling you who owned the drugs, could the government use that answer at trial to prove guilt?
Had Mr. Flowers explicitly invoked his right to silence and invoked the right to silence in that manner, I don't think the government could have used that statement at trial, but that's not what happened here. The evidence is that Mr. Flowers said, I know who those drugs belong to, but I'm not going to tell you. And taken as a whole, that statement is the implication of that statement and the argument that the AUSA advanced at trial was, I know who these drugs belong to, they belong to somebody else, but I'm not going to tell you who they are. And it's important to put that statement in context with the rest of the... I'm sorry, Your Honor. Other questions?
I was wondering about the other issue because it seems to me that Mr. Tassa raised a continuing objection to the use of his refusal to answer about the ownership of the drugs. And I'm wondering if you can distinguish our cases that hold that the... continuing objection is enough to preserve the issue that was raised again during closing argument.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, I don't think the record does support that there was a continuing objection in this case.
Oh, boy.
The argument was at sidebar with the court. It was an objection to the specific question about what Mr. Flowers said. There was an extended discussion with the court about whether or not that statement constituted silence, and then...
The court, I will overrule the objection. I don't think he's making a termination. Mr. Cassif, so may the record then reflect our Doyle versus Ohio objection, and we will just proceed without our having to object further, the court, okay?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think what that means is, after sidebar, when the defense counsel, when the AUSA goes back to ask the question, will we have our Doyle versus Ohio objection without having to object again? It was one question, one answer. It was not an extended line of questioning, and then it was left alone until closing argument the next day. I don't think the record supports that there's a continuing objection here.
Oh, sure it does.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. And
you can't disagree with that. Now I'm not going to let you. Respectfully or otherwise.
And, Your Honor, I would submit that even if there was...
This is just for the next time.
Even if there was a continuing objection in this case, I don't think that it rises to the level of a Doyle violation, and I think it would be bad policy to infer or strain to infer a continuing objection without explicitly... It would put an onerous burden on the court to sua sponte, cut off counsel in closing argument and rule on whether or not something was objectionable or not.
Look, seriously, Mr. Cassif's argument at the sidebar was very complete. And it certainly covered the issue raised by the closing argument as well as the issue raised by the initial question. So, yeah.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that even if the objection was preserved here, it was certainly harmless error in light of the overwhelming evidence of the defendant's guilt.
See, now you're cooking.
The fingerprints, the ID, the testimony from two witnesses, including the defendant's own cousin, that they had seen him with drugs in the apartment. There's an overwhelming amount of evidence in this case pointing to the defendant's guilt. And the use that the government made of the statement was comparatively small. It was a couple of lines out of 10 pages of closing argument. In the direct testimony, there was no argument. It was simply a question and answer about what the defendant said. And the use of the statement was very small in comparison to the large amount of other evidence for the defendant's guilt.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tassif, how much, well, you don't have any time, but you can take him. Does he have time? No, but you can have a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to throw a few more stunts in. U.S. versus DiGiorato, 876 F. 2nd, 576. This court said that a 404B objection at trial was sufficient to preserve the issue during closing argument. What was I to do? Stand in front of the jury and argue repeatedly with the court about its earlier ruling? This court said that I had reason to believe that once admitted, the government could argue. So it would only have drawn more attention to the already damaging statement. Secondly, this court in Savory, U.S. ex rel. Savory versus Lane, 832 F. 2nd, 1011. That was a case where the defendant refused to speak to the police. This court said, highlighting and pointing to a refusal to answer questions is a Doyle violation for the purpose of proving guilt. And that's exactly what the government lawyer did when he says in his argument he also knew who owned the drugs, but he wouldn't say who that person was. That's a false statement by the defendant. Who didn't testify. He knew whose drugs were all right, but the second half was not true because he owned the drugs. He owned the drugs, and he's not going to say who was. It's as damaging a Doyle error as can be, and we ask that the court reverse. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tester. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, you're the defendant. Okay, well,
thank you.
Thank you for
thank you.
For your